Jacob and John are the creators at Low Cellar, and they're here with The Antidote. Thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Even though it's a hot day and you've just played your set, you're still willing to stick it out doing this. So you've been making music since 2018, at least for Low Cellar. Was songwriting and performing something you guys both wanted to do?
Absolutely. So I'm John. I play drums. I first started playing music with Jake in another project led by our mutual friend. In fact, we all were on the same dorm floor together. That's how we met. And of course, the music heads kind of gathered into the lounge spaces, and you knew who was into music by the vinyls that they carried or if they had acoustic guitars in their room, and this man surely did. And you still have that seagull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, same guitar. Yeah. I think songwriting was maybe one of the first places that music became very exciting for me. Played guitar for like a couple years, but I think pretty much as soon as I could start like coming up with little songs and riffs and things, that was what was exciting to me. So I think it's just pretty much been that ever since. Everything is geared towards songwriting.
Well, something about the songwriting is that your music has always followed the route of being different. Like your first single in 2018, Pinprick, you know, very chill with folk styling. So the band doesn't want to get stuck in a box.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Thanks for the research. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, as you said, I write music with like a couple other projects, and so Low Cellar has changed a lot, but I think the common thread is that I want it to be kind of challenging music. Not like necessarily playing wise it could be, but more so just like, I guess, the content of the music. I want ideas that maybe I feel unsure about that are a little tonally different than you know, kind of like your straight ahead like pop rock and alternative songs. I wanted somewhere to put those because I have a big like desire to experiment and do things that are just have some edges and can hit in different ways. So Low Cellar's always been that project, and as it's changed, that's been the common thread.
Of course, there's a negative with making challenging music is that sometimes if it becomes too challenging for your listeners, they drop you.
Yeah, it's with the way that music is right now, I guess like the first priority with music for me, at least, and especially with Low Cellar, has always been musical. I try to just scarcely consider the listener. And in some ways, actually, like this last record that we put out might be the most challenging and also maybe the most consideration for the listener. So I feel a little more like there's a balance to be struck there. Like, of course, I care, you know, what people think about it. And
yeah. So I joined Low Cellar later. Like I said, we were in another band together. And then COVID, a bunch of bands went on hiatus, and it was 2 years into COVID, deep COVID, I call it, where we wanted to, Jake had this collection of songs that he wanted to put together, and I asked him, if you're having me as an instrumentalist, what would you say that my assignment is? What is the through line between all of these songs? And to my glee, he said rowdy. As long as it was rowdy. Our understanding was we wanted to subvert any expectations musically. So I took that into thinking about rhythm as well. So you'll hear a lot of 3/4 or other kind of time signatures just weaved in. And maybe that's our influences. Being from Seattle, Washington, there's a bunch of bands that made that actually cool that we respect. And so Sunnydale Real Estate to be a specific influence.
Big time.
What's interesting about the band is that Low Cellar has given the description of Tagu, the new album, as being strange rock and roll. And, you know, so I might have been maybe a little bit more delicate, but it's true that it really is strange. But you yourself have said experimental. So that is the better descriptor.
I suppose so, yeah. It always comes out different how we talk about our music.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I like thinking about how strange isn't necessarily a word with negative connotation. I like strange people. And this project's, Jake was just kind of illustrating how he has different projects for different purposes, and the Low Cellar brand has been strange from inception.
Sure. I've also seen Low Cellar called post-hardcore, art rock, noise rock, folk rock, post-rock, and all of those do fit, especially that post-rock aspect, because you really hear that on Ash Wednesday from the new album. You know, it sort of reminds me of Thrice. Have any bands like that played an influence on you besides Sunny Day Real Estate?
That's a great question.
When I show our music to people, a lot of times they pick out Brand New as an inspiration, and they used to say that about our old band that we were in together also, so maybe that's just what we bring to the table.
There's definitely something, you know, in the blood, Brand New, you know, controversial band, but I don't know, like, if, especially when you're a kid, like, when something hits you like that, it sticks with you, and I think, the delivery from Jesse Lacey has always been, something that has stood out to me a lot. But for me, at least, like, Brand New and Manchester Orchestra are, as far as the genre goes, like, my really big ones, who I think have both toured with Thrice, if not, certainly Brand New, maybe Manchester Orchestra. And then the other one is Me Without You, all people who have been able to kind of, like, tastefully weave ambience, you know, into a sound while maintaining something that's not like space rock, if that makes sense. It's not like
grounded.
It's not so to the moon, but there's like an atmosphere to it, and I love the combination of like intensity and atmosphere.
Even though you bring in a lot smoother vocals than you get from Aaron.
That's true.
I was gonna say I aspire. I think I can only hope that as we go, it gets stranger.
I gotta start wearing shades like Ricky on the kit.
So true. Yeah, I've been saying that since day one.
We gotta get into the album title, Tagu, To a God Unknown. There must be a background story to that.
And there is a background story. Yeah, absolutely. To a God Unknown is a John Steinbeck book, like an early John Steinbeck novel.
You're kidding, it's one that I haven't read. That's an oddity.
It was one I think he was a little ashamed of. It was an early one. I think it was a really long write, and much shorter than, it's about like the size of like Cannery Row or something like that, one of those kind of like more modest length books. But I love it. It's like, I love seeing an author as he kind of like progresses through something. I mean, we're talking about like John Steinbeck, like, you know, I don't even know if this is like the right way to talk about him, but his first books feel like this kind of youthful overflow, which he like managed to like hold on to in his later books, but then kind of balance out with this very mature, like methodical, like storytelling.
Sure.
But Tagu is like really emotional and passionate, and there's moments of that in a lot of his books, but the whole book just feels like that to me.
So you're saying that you just ripped off the whole album from John Steinbeck?
Page one, song one.
Yeah. No. The album has like a narrative arc to it, which we touched on a little bit. I try not to touch on it too much because I think it's sort of more interesting to just listen and suss it out a little bit, like as much as possible. I've heard that it's a little incoherent narratively, which I am completely fine with. I kind of wanted something to just like sandwich the song, like ideological things to sort of sandwich the albums between and inform the music. So one of those things that informed it is To a God Unknown. And then there's a couple other books, one in particular called The Society of Spectacle, which is a Guy Debord book, which sort of provide the ideological framing and tensions of the album. I kind of see the album as like sitting on Tagu, and then this book, The Society of Spectacle, as sort of subverting it, them being in conflict like through the album.
You talk about subverting it. We got to talk about what subverting the music Because to show the diversity of the album, Low Cellar goes from the noise rock of Escaping the Swaddling of Skin, and just one track later shifts into this dreamy folk rock of Eyes Are Mine. How do people react to music changes like that?
Live or recorded or both?
Both.
Let's see. You want to talk live? I'm usually not really watching what people are doing when we play,
yeah,
to be honest.
I think with our emphasis being on music that we're proud of and is a little bit challenging, it's not absolutely absorbable on the first pass. A lot of who we play to might be hearing us for the first time. So they have to take a lot of cues from us. If we're really in sync with each other, no matter if we're playing Eyes Are Mine, the folky rock, or if we're playing Swaddling Skin, I think anybody watching a live band just gets joy watching them have fun and be in sync together. And we've played these songs over and over again where it really feels comfortable, at least for us, transitioning between those genres. And so hopefully that just indicates to an audience that this is a totally normal thing and you're enjoying it, whether they are or aren't.
Okay, I got to pull in one of my favorites. And we'll talk about the title track, Taigu. You're probably not going to answer this, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. So the song says, blood red, the altar in the fire, burned out the street light embers. We're one, we're not two for a moment. Drip, drip, the sacrament is given. So now I can usually sort out lyrics, but I got to admit, that's leaving me totally stumped.
That is one of the more direct references of the whole album to title track, Taigu. That moment in particular, there's a moment in the book when the main character is sort of on like a wilderness, kind of like discovery, kind of arc thing. His land is dying and he's trying to understand, I think, something just about the earth and about living. And he meets like a hermit. This is like kind of part of what I'm talking about with like the just overflowing sort of passion of the book. Like, I don't really see this happening in a lot of other Steinbeck books, but he meets a hermit, and the hermit is basically like, do you want to just see like the most like beautiful thing, craziest thing in the world? And every night the hermit, as the sun is setting like its final rays, he sacrifices an animal, like cuts its throat, spills its blood as like in a very kind of like Old Testament sort of way, but it's to like kind of pay homage to life, not necessarily celebrate death. And this moment in our album, what the character finds into a God unknown is like a deep inrootedness in the cycle of life, that, you know, death and life are terrible and beautiful, and that life, you know, kind of springs up from the earth, and I think the spiritual implications of life, like, come from the earth. And in our album, our character experiences, like, a disconnectedness with the earth, and so is going through, like, the death pangs, like, the death agony, and there's nothing there to, like, pull our character back to the sense of purpose in it. And so through the song, he or she is just being kind of released into nothing. And in that moment, there's still like a taste of this purposeful life that was not found in the character's journey. And it's not the last song, you know, like more things happen. But it's the darkest moment of the album is those death pangs are not really satisfied by this like deep and dense satisfaction with the purpose that came from the death, but there is an experience of something.
You really don't hesitate with going deep in the lyrics. And obviously that must, you know, translate through with the literature that you're reading. Is that true? Is that depth level the same throughout all of the music of Low Cellar?
That's a good question. I guess a lot of Low Cellar has a narrative. It draws from books in literature, partially because I think to kind of get away from your own ideas and your mm-hmm. own tendencies, it's really helpful to have just something to look at to say, like, you know, how can I recreate that or paint that? How could I, like, suggest this moment musically? A lot of my other music is very just, like, personal narrative. And it's fun to paint that, you know, paint your, like, internal world. There's some of that, like, in that, in Tagu as well. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I do really love kind of just spending a lot of time with books. I tend to go back to the same books over and over, and I've read Tagu many times at this point. So, yeah, I suppose it depends on the song. I would like to think that the things I write are intentional, but also not be too precious about, like, it needs to be so articulate what I'm saying. I think it just needs to feel the way I feel about it.
John, we're leaving you out of the loop here, man.
Oh, it's fine. I'm not the songwriter. I don't even know what the lyrics are until they come out. No, that's not true.
John was, like, very pivotal in making this story a focus of the album. Yeah, I really appreciate that about it. I kept bringing, like, well, what does this do with the story? And, like, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Jake is the main lyricist. There's a lot of vulnerability there when it's your words. You know, I get to play drums, and so I'm just sending snare shots and kick out into the atmosphere, and there's nothing emotionally that I feel attached sometimes to my drumming. However, I'm seeing Jake be really thoughtful, and when you put your thoughts out into just the public, he's been exercising a lot of strength there, and I've seen his songwriting become more specific. Like how you were just saying, a lot of times we're just trying to paint a picture musically. No matter what, I would love to continue to work with Jake in whatever capacity is. I see him as a storyteller. And it's just, also, if you're a drummer, you'll get this. Jake is also a drummer. So it could go one of two ways. You could have the drummer that's leading the band look at you and really put their drum imprint on you. Or he can just trust you. And Jake has extended a lot of rhythmic trust to me that has helped me feel like I'm actually contributing something. Mm-hmm. And so I will take whatever credit I can get. But I definitely understand that we're building something unique together. And yeah, we're not just painting with, like, Crayola crayons, but it feels like we're actually taking it all the way to the root. He's taking his ideas from books and stuff, so it almost feels like we're out in nature trying to create our own paints with which to paint, and that's been the really beautiful part of being in a DIY band. We don't have to answer to anybody, which is great.
Just a couple of weeks back, Low Cellar dropped a new single, and once again, it's different. It's this interpretation of the Judy Collins song, I Know Where I'm Going. And so, how do you think the world's going to react, or how she would react to your version?
Try not to think about it. Another privilege of being a DIY band. Don't really think so much about about those things. I love the song. I think the lyrics may be traditional, like a traditional Irish mm-hmm. Folk song that Judy Collins sang. But in any case, that's it's one of my favorites to play. I play music sometimes at, like, retirement homes, and I play music with kids. I'm a teacher, and I kind of do different takes on that song depending on the population. Yeah, it was just really stuck in my head at the time. So taking a song that was kind of, like, wistful and not, like, unrequited love, but, like, you know, just, like, a kind of yearning for love. And, yeah, once again, like, subverting that to anger and rage. It felt right for the song and for the moment, and I love to sing it, and I hope that's enough.
Feels good to play.
Yeah.
I have a lot of fun.
But that was an unusual one to pick. It's not like you're doing a Joni Mitchell song, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
That's so overtly familiar.
Right. I think that's why I felt like I could act a little more familiar. And I have never met someone who's heard this song before. Had you heard it before?
I couldn't place it, and I had to actually look it up.
Yeah.
And then realized Judy Collins is like, right, maybe I have heard this.
People give me old like guitar books and just anything music related. And so I was doing, where did this come from? Lessons with an older gentleman. I believe this is where this came from. And I got a bunch of like really old method books for folk guitar.
Mm.
And just one of them happened to have this song and the melody was notated with the chords. And I was like, oh my God, it's so gorgeous. So that's where I heard it. But I would feel much more strange taking, I think, a very well-known song. Hopefully people hear the normal, you know, real song based off of our interpretation of it. Yeah.
So let's finish up with what you finished Taigu with, which was postlude to an elegy. Part of the last verse goes, "We all act so simple. We hold more than we could say. We throw away what won't help us. If we have to, if we can, what do you think of a world like that?" So I know what I think about that, but I want to hear what you guys have to say. Like, are you okay with having a world like that?
No. No. I think the whole album, like I said, there's kind of many angles to it. Every time I talk about it, sort of a different angle ends up being the focus. So if that's confusing, I guess I don't apologize, but you can email me. But it's in Postlude to an Elegy, kind of just looking back on the album, it's sort of about how we have a world that tries to create your identity for you and your values for you, mostly based off of money and comfort and what is like incentivized, the kind of life that's like incentivized to give you those things. Yeah, I mean, the whole album is sort of about this character struggling with this, of just feeling like this emptiness in terms of like identity and feeling like the piece is there, but not really understanding like what piece of this is something that someone just told me I am versus what is who I really am. If you listen to all the albums, like, you know, I kind of tend to end on either a very optimistic or a very pessimistic note. I kind of just tend towards extremes. I'm very proud of Postlude to an Elegy because I feel like it lands in the middle of, like, there are amazing connections and amazing things that can happen in this life. It's not all bad, but do we want, like, the kind of world that just tries to hollow you out and replace you with essentially just, like, a product, you know, a consumer? Or do we want a world where, like, we continually discover ourselves? And I think I just see in my community a lot in Seattle that people who are very serious about that struggle a lot in the world. And I feel that struggle myself. And I also feel the option to take my sort of standard political place in the world as a comfortable person. I feel both wanting to make decisions that will make my life harder because they're truer to me, and wanting to sacrifice little things or sometimes big things just to be comfortable and to escape just like the pain of the world. And so, no, I don't think we should have a world like that. I think that our world should function off of discovery and acceptance, and I don't think it does. hopefully it's just a, I think this is what we have. Like, what do you think? I think the song turns the question back on people.
It's bound to be obvious that Low Cellar may not be everyone's thing. Is that important to you guys at all?
Not really.
No.
I think, is it a choice to stay humble, or are we made to stay humble? Because, like, it's not really taking off or anything like that. But what I love is sort of the constant reminder of, like, why do we bother spending time, money, other resources, and dedication toward making music together? And, I mean, when COVID happened and I stopped meeting as a band with Jake and our other buddy Cody, I realized just, like, a huge part of me also went dormant. It's an expression. It's, I guess it's like dancing. And so I love dancing, or music.
You love dancing?
No, I don't. What? Jake knows I don't like dancing. But that's what I care about. And so whether we become dance famous on TikTok and go viral, that's not my concern. It's more like, what are we pushing to be unique for, and I don't know, if I can play something on the drums and I look up and I see Jake giving me a stank face because he likes it, that means so much more to me than having thousands of listens on a track. That would be nice too, though.
Yeah, either or. I think likewise, it's hard to imagine doing music in a way that the balance is shifted towards the listener. I feel that it's very important that the balance stays shifted towards you and what you want to express. Yeah, I feel like I've made my compromises with that. I would love to play and tour. I love the music community, but I don't expect anyone to give us the kind of career where we're able to just spend all day, every day making. I mean, it's sort of you never know kind of thing, but also I think when you have the priorities that we have, you know, you got to be realistic. So we do our best to present our music and make it legible to people. And we are also certainly writing the music that we want to write first and foremost.
You see, I often have artists come and they talk about the honesty of their music. And so often, they're really talking off the top of their head because they're doing it as a commodity to sell to the masses. But this is where you guys are being truly creative because you're creating it for yourself just with the hope that other people are also going to be enjoying it.
I just want to give people an option to listen to strange rock. You know, if there's not much competition in the strange rock market because nobody's buying. But I just think our music world is big enough to hold a band like us as an option for people to listen to. And I just love knowing that people can come and go as they please. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it serves something for our music community, for us to encourage ourselves continually to subvert expectations, try to put some dissonance into the track, try to, I don't know. I think a lot of where we get our ideas from is, not many people know this, but Jake, I think you had like a degree in like classical composition sort of thing. And so that's what makes it so exciting, at least for me as an instrumentalist in this band. Any band practice that I show up to, we're not finding the same tone. Again, we're always painting with new colors, and so it's serving me still. So that's why we're still in it. And I love hearing if it was able to create a special, unique moment for a listener.
John and Jacob, I really appreciate you guys coming for a talk about Low Cellar with The Antidote. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. Yeah, really appreciate it.